Welcome to Now You Know Politics. I'm Catherine Sussman.
And I'm Rob Laidlaw.
Today, we will be discussing all things whale in the news, from the latest update on the now infamous Bill S-203, a Canadian federal bill to end the captivity of whales and dolphins, to the Vancouver Aquarium's latest decision to sue the park board, to the adorable beluga who turned up in Norwegian waters deemed a spy. This episode will take you down to the depths and then hopefully back up to the surface. Thanks for listening. Hey, Rob, how are you? Great to speak with you again today.
Oh, I'm doing fine and it's great to talk.
Well, this is exciting because we're going to do something a little bit different right now. We're just going to start talking about current animal welfare issues going on, not a specific, you know, topic that you are completely knowledgeable about as usual, but just kind of a more casual chat with you about your general opinion on certain current events.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know, I think the conversational format really works for people as well. I personally find it very interesting when I hear, you know, just people having conversations about things.
Exactly. So, of course, where I want to start is talking about Bill S-203, because that's something that I've personally put a lot of my time and energy into over the last bunch of years. And it's something that you've certainly put a lot of time and energy into as well. And we're in a kind of dire situation with it now, aren't we? Looking like it's almost going to pass, but then not quite, probably going to make it in time.
We're down to the wire on this. I know there was a lot of celebration on the part of anti-captivity whale advocates and really just anybody that cares about animals or animal issues. I think a lot of people assumed that because the Liberals had said that they were going to support this, that it was a breeze, that it would just go through no problem. But having been involved in these kinds of things for the last three decades, I'm rightly or wrongly always very cynical, very suspicious. And I always wonder when I see things that even seem like they're, you know, just down to the wire and are going to sail through, you know, what can be done to make sure they don't go through by the people who don't like them. So,
but it's funny because at one point you were almost convinced. You got I never see you positive on these issues, but you became positive for a little while. You thought, oh, I might be surprised by this. This one might actually get through. But now it's kind of gone back the other way.
I think there's a number of possibilities. It could go through as is, but then let's just, for the sake of argument, say that the Liberals don't really want to support this, but they see that it might be a good news thing for the election and they're going to let it go through. Well, it's entirely possible that, you know, if they have concerns that they're not expressing, that they could use the Fisheries Act or something else later to, you know, address the concerns that they had about Bill S-203 and basically, you know, render it or parts of it ineffective. Or I believe they could just choose not to bring it up before the election and let it run out of time.
Before we go on, maybe just for those listeners who don't even know what we're talking about, Bill S-203, it's a bill to end the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada. It was introduced in the Senate as a private member's bill, and it passed through the Senate, all three stages. You spoke at the Senate committee hearing on it. I spoke, a number of people from the Whale Sanctuary Project spoke on it in support of this bill. It then made its way to the House of Commons. It passed first reading, second reading, and now the second hour of third reading is scheduled for June 20th, but the House of Commons rises on June 19th. So they're basically trying to trade an hour with the NDP or Bloc to get it ready before the House rises. It's truly down to the wire.
I don't think we should count our chickens before they're hatched, so to speak. I think that only when it goes through, you know, can we be assured that it's actually going to be law. And then we have to be very vigilant after the fact to make sure that the bill or parts of the bill are not gutted later through some other type of mechanism.
How much longer do we have before it's just dead in the water?
Not very long. My understanding is that the government is supposed to call for an election sometime in June. And if that's the case, then there's not very much time at all, you know, less than a month. So, you know, it could be a little bit longer than that. Who knows? It could be a little bit less than that. We just don't have that information. The government does. We don't. But no matter what way you think about the timing, it's not a lot of time.
So getting into the politics of this a bit, you and I had been trying to do something much smaller than this bill with ZooCheck, which is just to close the wild capture loophole. Can you explain that a little bit? And yet we were being stalled over and over. We had such high-level meetings, you know, with all kinds of, you know, people in Ottawa and lots of liberal support. And then in the end, that just completely was a dead end. So we ended up, you know, jumping on board, which we were doing simultaneously anyway, supporting Bill S-203. Can you just sort of ramble a little bit about the politics behind why something that is essentially so symbolic, because it's not like Canada is capturing hordes of wild whales and bringing them for the purposes of captivity. This is something that it's barely happened in the last decade, two decades. So why is something that should seem so simple with the majority of Canadians behind it, it's such a feel-good thing. It really would be such a boon to the government to pass something like this as it has huge public support. Why is it so difficult to get a change like this made?
That's the million-dollar question. And I think for many years on many issues like this, not just this one alone, but on many issues like this, we've all been struggling is to understand where is the opposition coming from? What is it based in? Why is it so difficult to get relatively simple and, as you say, often symbolic measures in place that actually speak to the plight of animals? It's very baffling. You know, we've certainly heard that with regard to the whale trade aspects, the export and import issue particularly, that, you know, perhaps people feel it sets a precedent for other kinds of issues like the export of old growth timber or the export of seal products or other things. But it's something
the slippery slope argument, basically, that if we do this for whales, then things are going to start becoming more lax in other areas.
Well, that's one aspect or argument that we've heard about this. But to be honest, we haven't been able to figure it out yet. Most of our colleagues that also deal in these issues find it baffling because a lot of these are really no-brainers. They're easy for the government to do. They will make whatever government does them look very good. And as you said, are widely supported by the public. You know, that it just fits in with current public sensibilities and also with the science about what's going on in the world and about animals and all of that. So,
and also with Indigenous people's beliefs and value systems, because the opposition was trying to, you know, make the case that this is going against Indigenous rights, First Nations people's right. But the truth is there were all kinds of stipulations, changes that could be made and that are probably in place now in there just to continue to protect First Nations rights to, for example, hunt narwhal, that sort of thing. So it really wasn't going to affect, you know, anything in that regard.
Yes, I think in many of these issues that, you know, people bring up the First Nations concerns, but they're addressable, their concerns can be mitigated. I thought it was disingenuous of people who were speaking to the Senate Committee on Bill S-203 to bring this up when this is something they had never brought up before. And, you know, I think for the most part, First Nations people, it's certainly in my personal experience, they're very good about wildlife. They have a level of understanding that many other people don't. And we've certainly found with regard to marine mammals that they're generally opposed to them being taken from the wild and put in the tanks. So, you know,
Dan Christmas, I believe it was very much in support. He's from Nova Scotia. And of course, the senator who is carrying on the bill, who took over representing the bill, is that Senator Sinclair? Is that Marie?
Yeah, Marie Sinclair.
As well.
Yeah, and they're First Nations senators, and you know they're heroes in all of this in bringing it forward after the retirement of Senator Wilfrid Moore. So I think it's sort of just something that some of the opponents of the bill throw against the wall, and they hope that it will stick. And I don't think it has. I really don't think it has. But I guess, you know, we'll see what the outcome is in the very near future.
All right. So moving on from that one, I was thinking we could just chat for a couple of minutes about the Vancouver Aquarium suing the Park Board. What are your thoughts on that one?
Oh, I don't understand it. The Vancouver Aquarium said that they were going to phase out the keeping of, you know, whales and dolphins in their facility. That was something that came from the board of directors. They said it's been for 20 years a massive distraction, and yet here they are after this decision wanting to sue for damages. I think it's ridiculous, you know, and I think it's disingenuous. Every type of business evolves with the times, and there are ups and downs economically and otherwise, and you just go with the flow and you adapt. You know, this is
basically just to, again, just for listeners who might not be aware of what's happened, on May 14th, the Oceanwise Conservation Authority, they're the parent company for the Vancouver Aquarium, they filed a lawsuit against the park, saying that they're suing for damages for breach of contract and costs. And I know they had big plans to expand the beluga exhibit? And so they're arguing, you know, they've taken a huge, huge loss now that the changes have been put in place.
Yeah, I think the aquarium should have seen the writing on the wall and not just pushed ahead in the face of all the opposition that had surfaced in recent years about and the science regarding whales and dolphins in captivity. And I think their arguments are disingenuous. I think when you look at other types of facilities, a good example is elephants. You know, there are a number of facilities that have either stopped elephant keeping, phasing it out through attrition, or moving their elephants to sanctuaries. And, you know, an argument was put forward that, hey, these are the animals that attract the public and everybody, you know, the institution's going to suffer and the public will suffer and all of that. And those concerns have all proven to be untrue. In fact, when the Detroit Zoo got rid of their elephants, Winky and Wanda, you know, there were these doomsayers saying that, oh, now nobody's going to come to the zoo. We needed the elephants. In fact, they said that here in Toronto, too. In the case of Detroit, my understanding is that the numbers of visitors actually went up post moving the elephants out.
And I can tell you, too, with Toronto, I think that the Toronto Zoo is seen as a much more progressive zoo now, just from friends that I have with children. Like, people are really proud of the fact that the Toronto Zoo took that step and move the elephants to sanctuary.
Yeah, well, I would say that Toronto Zoo did not want to take that step. They fought tooth and nail right up until we drove the elephants out of the zoo to stop it.
Fair enough.
You know, they did not want to move those elephants, certainly not to a sanctuary. They wanted to send them, if they were going anywhere, to another zoo.
But see, now they're reaping the benefit of having done that, which is the same thing that would happen if SeaWorld were to get on board with projects like the Whale Sanctuary Project and, you know, help move their orcas to sanctuary. They would be heralded as these huge heroes, as Naomi Rose and I were discussing when we were talking about whale captivity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like the zoo people have never done a first-year public relations course. You know, they could they could come out of these things looking like heroes, you know, progressive heroes and champions of the environment, yet almost inevitably they take the most regressive position, they put up walls, they become hyper-defensive, they never admit their deficiencies, they never admit that times are changing. And
that's just bad for business. So why is that the way it goes? Very odd.
I don't understand it personally, because certainly in all the years I've been doing this, I've met people in the zoo industry that are progressives that say, yeah, we do need to change. We need to recognize that certain animals shouldn't be in captivity. We do need to recognize that, you know, for all those that remain, we have to do a much, much better job. And there are perspectives articulated in the academic zoo literature and even at zoo conferences where people from the zoo industry, icons in the zoo industry, are standing up and saying, you know what? We don't educate anybody. We're not really conserving animals. So there are those voices in the industry. But for some reason, the regressive, ultra-conservative voices in the industry seem to hold the day for now. Hopefully they won't in the future.
Speaking of which, regressive zoo points of view, the opening of Marineland just happened. So how is that place surviving, Marineland Ontario? It seems that the parking lot is emptier and emptier every time I've had to drive by.
Yeah, well, from what I can tell, they're, you know, it's their last gasps before they die. I think, you know, it may have been this sort of stellar, innovative kind of amusement park many, many decades ago. But today, when you look at what else is out there, even amongst the zoo and aquarium community, you see that this is dated. It's a tired facility, as some people have said. And, you know, the numbers of visitors certainly anecdotally seem to be declining, if parking lot attendance and things like that are any indication. It's under a constant cloud of controversy. And as everybody knows, the owner, John Holler, passed away not too long ago. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens, but I think the writing is on the wall for Marineland. I think at some point it's going to close.
And just for listeners that may not know a lot about Marineland, although it's hard not to if you live in Canada with the ads that they've always, you know, had dominating TV. But Marineland is very, very controversial because firstly, they have just this overcrowded situation with the beluga whales. So I'm not sure what the exact number is now. Maybe you know, but it was something like over 50 belugas and I think two, maybe three swimming pools. And they're still using animals. They're still using cetaceans to do performances. There are people that still jump in the water with them, I think, and ride on them. And it's just a very, very antiquated show that's going on there.
I guess the term I might use to characterize Marineland right now is it's a survivor, but how long it will survive is anybody's guess. My guess is that it won't survive very long. I don't think the public has the appetite it used to for that kind of facility. Certainly, we're hearing that sentiment echoed in legislators too. You know, the local MPP has made very negative comments about the facility, as have other people that are in policy-making positions. So
Canadians, the socially conscious, environmentally conscious, and animal, you know, advocate Canadians are just shocked that this is still occurring right here in Ontario.
Yes, a lot of Canadians have this erroneous idea that in terms of animals, and by that I mean all animals, or in terms of wildlife, or in terms of the environment, that you know, Canada is super progressive and wonderful. And Canada is in many areas. You know, that's a fair characterization for issues possibly like immigration or other things.
Marijuana.
Yes, marijuana. When it comes to animals, wildlife generally, we're pretty much a backwater still. We have a long way to go. And in fact, I think there are countries all over the world, many that would be surprising. I would include India and others that are far, far better in the way they view and in the way they develop policy with regard to animals. It's very challenging here in Canada. We've got outdated laws. And for some reason, as we alluded to earlier, a very sort of indifferent body of elected representatives at most levels of government. And it really sort of is contrary to the image that Canada has in many parts of the world. In addition to just having laws, what we need to do is entrench animal welfare principles in those laws so that they provide a direction for the delivery of enforcement and other aspects of that legislation. So this is something we've been advocating for here in Ontario for quite some time, but it's getting a little bit more attention with the Ontario SPCA, which was the provincial body responsible for enforcing the Ontario Animal Welfare Act, which was called the Ontario SPCA Act, well, still is. But since the SPCA announced that they will no longer be enforcing the act, there's been a lot of discussion about what else to do. And a lot of that discussion was about law enforcement. And we've tried to tell people, wait, that's really important, but we also need here in Ontario an Animal Welfare Act in which you have entrenched animal welfare principles, because we've never had anything like that in the province. Yet you see it in jurisdictions all over the world where the five freedoms or the three foundational tenets of animal welfare are incorporated, or things like that are actually in the legislation that say animals have needs. They're both biological, they're in terms of their affective state, so how they feel, and it's in terms of how they live. And you know, we need to have those things in law. We need to change things and think differently. And that's a great starting point.
That animals are not things. But actually, it's interesting. That sort of ties us into the next subject that I was going to bring up, which is this UN report that came out, 1 million species face extinction. And what they're kind of doing in order to have a big transformation is to directly link the loss of species and, you know, habitat and everything to how it will affect human, you know, welfare. And that is a very effective way, probably the only way to actually get a lot of change in place, is if it's going to directly affect us as humans, then maybe we'll take an interest in it.
And for anybody concerned about nature, that should be shocking, that the only way to get people concerned about the loss of a million species, of potential loss of a million species of plants and animals, basically eroding, eliminating the fabric of our existence here on Earth. The only way to get them involved is through their own self-interest. Everybody in the world should be concerned just for those species themselves. It shouldn't have to be hinging on whether or not there's any effect on humans. I find it absolutely shocking. You know, I think
it is, but at least if it takes human selfishness to help the animals on the planet, then that's what we're going to have to do. But yeah, it is. It is shocking. So why don't we talk about this for a few minutes, about this report? Can you get into a bit of detail about what it said?
Well, I haven't read the entire report. I've read some of the materials that have appeared in credible media and a little bit more, but
I printed out the article, so I have it in front of me. I could just to kind of put it out there for people that aren't familiar with it. This article just came out, and it basically says 1 million plant and animal species are on the verge of extinction with alarming implications for human survival. And this is according to the United Nations report that was released. And I think it was something like 150 authors from like about 50 countries worked on it for, I think, 3 years.
And they looked at 15,000 different sources to inform their own report.
It's just absolutely dire. Like, ocean ecosystems are degrading, temperatures are rising to the point where like nothing's going to be able to survive, and exaggerating slightly, but not by much. And all kinds of, you know, common animals for us are seriously threatened. Even things like bees, butterflies, beetles, things that you wouldn't expect, things that we see on a regular basis.
Yes, absolutely. Something that when that report came out that I heard that was really alarming to me was that it was the third highest rated story globally for a little while. I can't remember exactly what period of time. I can't remember what the first item was. The second item was, what was the royal baby going to be named?
Oh, God.
And then the third item in terms of coverage was a million species threatened with extinction.
And that is what's wrong with the universe, well, with our planet Earth anyway. That's what's
exactly
wrong with the human species right there.
Exactly. It's just so alarming. But, you know, I think everybody is struggling with, how do we get people concerned? How do we get people willing to act? Because intellectually, a lot of people know what's going on. Certainly not enough. There's a lot of people that have no knowledge of this. They don't read very much and they don't follow these things. But there's a lot of people that do, and a lot of people in important positions of power that do. And what will it take to get them to act? You know, if a million species threatened with extinction won't get them to act, if that fact alone won't get them to act, I think a lot of people around the world that are informed are shaking their heads and assuming that there's no hope, that there's nothing that will get people to act, that what is happening now will happen, and we'll have to, or generations in the future will have to cope with the fallout, and then the Earth will go on and maybe we won't be around. But you know, what I'm hearing a lot more is, because of things like the royal baby's name, you know, getting more coverage than a million species becoming potentially extinct, I'm finding that there's a lot of hopelessness amongst people who are in these fields looking at this.
Well, I heard it from you the other day. You were being pretty dire and hopeless, and that was the first time in all these years that you were like, but is there any point in any of this? I'm like, what? But it's you, Rob. Don't say that.
Yeah, well, I sort of believe the cliche that the last thing anyone should lose is hope. But I think, you know, clinging to hope, at least in a big picture kind of scenario, is becoming increasingly challenging every single day, every single hour. You know, on my desk and on my computer, there's literally an avalanche of horrific news about all kinds of issues that are coming to me every day. And it's growing and growing and growing. And most of the problems, if you really look at them, if you look at ocean acidification, if you look at meat consumption, look at all kinds of issues that many of us are concerned about, they're getting worse. They're not getting better. So it is very challenging to remain hopeful.
Okay, so just to lighten things up at the end at the end of this, because now that we know like everything's doomed, it's apocalyptic, it's horrible, we've got to talk about the spy beluga, the Russian spy beluga whale.
Oh, yes.
We'll go out on the upswing in light here. What did you think of that? I thought the whole thing was pretty humorous.
It was humorous. And for people that haven't followed it, it's a beluga that showed up around the town of Hammerfest in Norway, and it was wearing a harness, and it was very, very friendly coming up to people and was obviously socialized to some extent with humans and had no fear of them. And it was a reasonably young beluga, and a fisherman and I believe a fisheries official from Norway had jumped in the water and removed this harness that had, oh God, I can't remember the Russian city, but it said something like product of this Russian town. And people were assuming it had probably escaped from
a Russian military facility.
Right.
Where, and where was, it was, I have the article where it was trained as a naval spy or to place bombs on enemy ships.
Right. And just while all of this sort of debate about, you know, where did this whale come from and what is its purpose was going on, someone came forward and said, no, it was actually a children's therapy animal from Russia. And
it was Simeon, the therapy whale.
Yes.
There was like a quote from Russian intelligence or something, or a general. And he was like, well, if we were going to send a spy beluga, I don't think we'd like harness it and put our country's logo on it or something. I don't know
right,
what he said.
Right.
It was really funny.
You know, and good point. That's probably true. And there's been a lot of discussion about this whale, obviously, in the media and amongst whale advocates. And one of the things that we did recently is we released a short video that basically is calling on Norwegian authorities not to just, you know, sort of dump the whale into an aquarium or something if no one comes forward to claim that it was their whale, but to take their time. There's no need to move the whale really quickly. You know, it's a friendly whale and it can be fed. It can be maintained for quite a while. And to talk to some of the whale sanctuary and whale rehab people, because there are many of them now in the world, and look at all the alternative options for this whale. I think that would be the prudent and humane thing to do, to look at all options before deciding what exactly should be done with this whale, if anything. So we released that video, and anybody can go to YouTube and look up Spy Beluga Whale and find that video, along with many others about the whale.
It's really cute because I read that he's become a bit of a local celebrity, and somebody accidentally dropped an admirer dropped their phone into the water with him, and he retrieved the phone for them.
Yes. So, you know, cute little whale. But, you know, I think that if people do have a lot of affection for that whale, then they should be demanding that before we do anything, let's look at all the options. What's best for that whale? You know, is it best to send that whale back to be a children's therapy? Well, I suspect not, you know, especially if it's socially isolated. And
that's a whole other topic that we can talk about for hours. Why,
exactly.
You know, why marine mammals do not actually make, why wild animals of any sort or exotic animals do not make good therapy. Pets.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just some sober look at this. Thinking about the welfare of the whale, I think that should be done first before anything else is done.
Well, Rob, don't lose hope. I can't take it when you're dire. So just keep saving the planet one animal at a time, okay?
Well, let me just finish by saying, like I said, the last thing anyone should lose is hope. And what I tell the people is say, well, you know, maybe I'm articulating a rather bleak scenario for the future. But then I say to people, what if I'm wrong? What if the next person that gets involved tips that whole thing towards another direction, you know? So what if I'm wrong? Maybe I am. Maybe, you know, all the other people that are sort of thinking that it's a bleak future are wrong. Maybe things can be changed. So, you know, let's see.
Thanks so much, Rob. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. It's great to discuss a bunch of different issues that are in the news.